Hey, Leading Learning listener, if improving as a learning business professional is one of your goals for 2026, make sure to go to leadinglearning.com/summit.
The Learning Business Summit is the only event laser-focused on professionals who lead and work in market-facing businesses that serve adult learners. Across 3 days online, you'll connect with peers and experts to strengthen both your knowledge and your network.
Featuring hands-on practitioners and subject matter experts, the live education sessions are designed for participation, reflection, and, most importantly, action to boost the reach, revenue, and impact of your learning business.
And because leveraging technology is essential for any learning business, the summit also includes demos of LearnTech platforms.
It all happens online January 27th, 28th, and 29th. Go to leadinglearning.com/summit to get all the details and join us for the Learning Business Summit.
Now, on with the episode.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
So we're here to do an after-action review, and this is the first of what we are imagining to be a two-part series. So we're not going to be super strict about this, but we do want to use kind of the structure, the idea behind an after-action review. And so, Jeff, do you want to talk about what that is and involves?
I will, and I'll talk about the action first, because what we are actually looking at is the Leading Learning Symposium, which was just a little over a week ago. We held that in Baltimore. It was an inaugural event for us. It was a learning event, and in the aftermath, we ourselves want to learn what we can for going forward and hopefully be able to make that a better and better event over time. So we're going to do what's called an after action review. This is something made famous by the Army. They do a lot of this type of thing. David Garvin, who's a learning theorist, has written quite a bit about it. And it's basically framed around four questions. What did we set out to do? What actually happened? Why is there a difference between the first two, if there is, and what should we continue doing going forward, and what should we change? And we may not adhere strictly to those questions as we go through, but we wanted to provide that as just kind of a basic framework for looking at the event overall and then looking at parts of the event.
Because we know how important the right questions are to the learning experience.
The right questions and being sure to reflect after any learning experience.
And so we're going to maybe loosely reference some of the evaluations, but again, we're just a little over a week after the event. We're still collecting those. We still need to dig into those a little bit more. We also have not yet debriefed with the faculty, which we want to do that. We want to debrief with Seth Kahn and Lisa Bing and Wes Tokel, who are the other faculty members involved. But I think one place to start here in terms of, you know, what did we set out to do, I think one thing we want to make sure is emphasized is that we really see the Leading Learning Symposium as part of a process. I mean, we are focusing this after action review on an event, but we really don't see this as a one and done event. We really want Leading Learning to be part of an ongoing discussion and ongoing community.
Yeah, and I think that's really important because obviously, I mean, we set out to hold an event. I mean, this is a big part of our strategy going forward. We want to be holding regular events where we bring people together, and we did that. And I think overall, it came off very well. I mean, we got very good feedback. We were both there and intensely involved in it, and it seemed to be a very beneficial and productive experience for the vast majority of the people involved. But, you know, at the same time, we knew this is part of establishing a community of people. One of the reasons we wanted to hold the event in the first place is we felt that there weren't enough opportunities for people who were leaders in the business of lifelong learning, continuing education, and professional development to be able to come together and not just in a single event, but over time as part of a community and as part of a process of learning. So, you know, this was not even the initial foray, but is one of our biggest forays, you know, so far into doing that, to establishing the event, but also to really, you know, moving this process forward, really solidifying a community.
And so, as we mentioned, you know, we've been getting some evaluations and been looking at those, and since we're still collecting those, won't say too much there, but, you know, one thing that's jumped out at us in looking at those is that there's pretty clearly a split. You know, for everyone who wants more breaks, you know, an equal number of people are saying, no, we can do with fewer breaks and just put more content in there. And for people who want more of the brief content pods, others, you know, wanted fewer of those. And there were people who loved the hot seats, and then people who said, you know, I don't really see the value of the hot seat if I'm not, you know, directly participating. So definitely a split there. And, you know, I think that's one thing that's jumped out in what we've seen so far in the evaluations.
And I think that goes back to, you know, looking at this as a community and looking at it as a process. I mean, I think there's a lot of diversity in this community. There are people who I think showed up at this you know, really wanting something different, really wanting to engage, who already were viewing this as part of an ongoing process. And I think there are people who showed up probably a little more wed to traditional ways of doing things, and that comes through. I think, you know, in terms of what we potentially do differently going forward, I mean, again, you know, we set out to hold an event. I think we pulled that off very well, but we were really setting out to define this as a process and define it as a community. And I think we probably need to be more intentional about that going forward. We need to communicate and articulate that better. We want people who are signing up for next year's Leading Learning Symposium to know that they're not just signing up for the symposium. Yes, we want them to show up at that. We want them to be at the event and fully engage, but we really want them to become part of this community, and we want them to become part of an ongoing process that includes what we do before the event, it includes what we do at the event, it includes what we do after the event, and, you know, on and on for the years to come. And I think the more we're able to elevate that, position that, articulate that, the better this will be over time. And I think we did okay at that for the first time out, but we can do a lot better at that going forward.
Well, and I think as part of that, we acknowledge that the Leading Learning Symposium, the Leading Learning community in general, is not for everyone. And I think part of that, and what you're saying, as we are more clear with our messaging going forward, I mean, it's not going to be for everybody, and some people are going to sort of self-select out, and that's okay. You know, I think both you and I know that we can't be all things to all people.
Yes, we are definitely going to try to avoid falling into that trap. And I think we already know, too, that one of the items that is going to probably separate out that or make that separation over time is the pre-event type content that we're providing. And maybe we can look at that as the first. We've just talked about the event overall and you know, try to give some perspective on that. Obviously, we're going to continue looking at that and thinking about it. But then, you know, we'd like to walk through specific parts of the event as we engineered it, as we designed it, and ask those questions about each of those parts, too. And if you're listening, you may not be in a position to do it right now. But if you are, grabbing the program for the event would probably be a great thing to do. And you can get that very easily just by going to leadinglearning.com/program. If you can't get it right now, you know, listen in, go back to it later as a point of reference, but that'll lay out all of the different components that we're not going to be talking about as we continue through this review of the Leading Learning Symposium. And the first of those is going to be the pre-event content that we put out there.
That's right. And so we had, you know, a variety of blog posts, but I think the main area of pre-event content were the emphatically recommended readings. And we know that we got a fair amount of feedback around those, that a lot of people were worried about not being able to complete them, or, you know, worried that if they didn't complete them, would the symposium itself, you know, be of value to them. And you know, our sense is, when we tried to let people know this, that, you know, these were labeled emphatically recommended readings because, you know, we didn't feel like we could truly require them. We're all adults here, and you know the demands on your time and energy better than we do. But we wanted to emphatically recommend them, and that, you know, we believed and believe that the symposium, you know, was that much more valuable for people who are able to review them in advance, but certainly they were not required, that the symposium would make, you know, complete sense even if you hadn't had a chance to read those.
Absolutely. But at the same time, I mean, there was a method to our madness here. I mean, we were doing this for good reason. And one of the things we did in the lead up to the symposium that I think we did well, but, you know, again, we can certainly do better going forward, is to explain why we did the things that we did. And with the pre-event content, content, the readings, and the other things that we provided. You know, one of the issues we were trying to address is that whenever you show up in at an event, I mean, people are typically coming from the same field or industry, so they do have some shared experience. But in terms of the prior knowledge that they're bringing to the event, often that's very fragmented and disconnected. So the readings and some of the other things we did were, you know, simply to try to establish a little bit more of a baseline of shared knowledge around some of the key concepts that went with the event. But again, I mean, as you were saying, these were recommended. They were not required. So if you showed up at the event without having done them, it was in no way going to diminish your experience. It would possibly enhance your experience if you had done them. But that, you know, that was something I think we could have communicated better around that. We tried to, you know, emphatically communicate around it, but did not probably succeed as well as we could around that. But I think that also goes back to the first point we made around, you know, really being able to position and communicate this as a process, you know, because the way we view it is, you know, if you could dip into those readings and the other materials a little bit before the event, great, you know, that would help to enhance the event. But, you know, we would also want to make it clear that, you know, just because the event is over doesn't mean, you know, you should never read Blue Ocean Strategy, which we recommended. And we actually just recommended the article, not the full book. But, you know, those readings are still there. The materials we put out before the conference are still there, and they should still be engaged in, even if you engaged in them before the conference. I mean, these are things that personally, you know, I read and revisit over and over and over again, and I will again before next year's symposium. And there's a good chance that maybe we'll just keep these as the same, you know, readings for next year, with the hope that over time we have a body of people who have actually, you know, engaged with all of the readings and all of the content, and we start to build up that baseline of knowledge that we were talking about.
2 points. I mean, one is that this gets back to the idea of, you know, this is not an event, this is a process. And so that idea of, you know, you have not lost the opportunity around those emphatically recommended readings if you haven't yet read them. And then the other is, you know, to pick up on, you know, one of the concepts from one of the emphatically recommended readings, you know, make it stick. To your point, Jeff, that this is spaced learning. I mean, if you're going to come back to these texts again and again, and you're going to, by revisiting, and that's going to help actually make sure that you are learning these, and, you know, and you're going to bring a slightly different perspective and experience to it each time you revisit it.
Yeah, so I think if we return to the, you know, the after-action review framework, you know, with this pre-event content, I mean, we set out to try to raise or at least level out the prior knowledge that attendees were bringing to the event. You know, as far as what actually happened, about what we expected. I mean, we knew this was going to be an uphill battle. Some people engaged with it much more than others. Some didn't engage with it at all. So, and, you know, did we really raise the base before this event? Probably not. If we look at it as a process over time, and, you know, we kind of stick with this and keep doing it and develop that as a culture, could we raise it over time? I think so. But, you know, it's going to take continued communication, just trying to be clear about what this is for, that it's not something to be, you know, stressed about. It's just something that's there as a resource and to engage with over time.
Yes, I think we both feel pretty committed to continuing emphatically recommended readings. And I think one thing we want to do is try to really explain why these are emphatically recommended readings, really emphasize that. Because, you know, if you're a leader in the business of lifelong learning, I mean, clearly you're reading. I mean, so it's all about us.
We
sort
hope
of,
so, yes. We, yeah,
seems hard to imagine that you wouldn't be reading. So I think it's about us making as strong a case as possible for why these should be priorities in your time and energy.
That's true, because it all comes down to priorities. Everybody has time to read something if you make it a priority. So we need to do a better job of positioning that going forward.
So if we look at how we kicked off day one of the symposium itself, we started with a priming activity. So what we started out to do there was we didn't want to just be talking about social learning or active learning. We wanted to actually be doing social learning and doing active learning. And we also wanted to make sure that we were creating a sense of community from that first session. So that's what we set out to do. So what actually happened, Jeff?
You know, I think with that we succeeded, and when I say we, we have to give the nod to Seth Kahn on that, because Seth is the mastermind behind the jumpstart storytelling method that we use there, which basically had people, you know, going through these rapid rounds of telling stories about really meaningful learning experiences that they've had in the past. And these didn't have to be, you know, directly related to business and professional life. They could be really about anything. And we did, you know, a couple of rounds of that. So people sharing those stories at tables together, you know, and then Seth had this process of kind of filtering the best story out of the participants.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say the best story, but it was the story that had resonated with listeners the most. And of course, the whole room hadn't gotten to hear everyone else's stories. But still, out of those two rounds, we got to focus in on the one story that had sort of impacted the greatest number of listeners so far. And I do think that that was interesting for me. That was Ralph Gaillard from CPA Society.
From the Illinois CPAs, yeah.
And so, you know, I think the interesting thing there was that he had not, it wasn't about his current, you mm-hmm. know, role or his, you know, CPA, you know, society life. It was from, I believe, high school, but it was an encounter with a poem in high school English, if I'm remembering correctly.
That's right. And, you know, obviously had a great impact on him at a, you know, emotional, spiritual sort of level. And it was clear that it had an impact, too, on the folks in the room as he was telling it, because Ralph came up and, you know, and shared that story with everybody after he had sort of been picked out as the person who had the most impact. And I know it hit me. And I think, you know, that was great, because I thought it was nice that it was a story that wasn't necessarily about a professional or business setting. I mean, it would have been fine if it was, but I think that really helped to break down some barriers. I mean, we really got people talking with each other. I know this made some people uncomfortable, which is fine. You know, I think there were some uncomfortable times in the symposium in general for people, starting off with this one. But, you know, we made the point early on, and we made it as part of the pre-event content too, that, you know, often being uncomfortable, having to make efforts in ways that you may not want to, is often what leads to the best learning. And, you know, I think this succeeded. It's one of the things we'll have to think about going forward. With respect to scale, you know, as this event gets bigger, this actually involved a lot of moving around, people putting hands on each other's shoulders. That's one of the things that really made some people uncomfortable, I think. But, you know, whether this scales or not, we'll have to see. I mean, Seth has done it with up to 1,000 people before, so it could scale. We may decide there's a better way to go about this, but I think that, you know, that opening of really trying to get people to connect on that, on a really human level more than anything else, to help really facilitate the conversation from that point forward. And I feel like it worked very well.
And I think that it gives people a way to connect with the other attendees in a meaningful way. I mean, you know, sometimes when you just exchange name and title and organization, it's hard for me sometimes to keep that in my mind. But if I can remember, you know what, oh, Ralph was the one who, you know, that Edgar Allan Poe poem really impacted, suddenly then I'm beginning to, you know, see him as not just a name on, you know, an attendee roster. I have that piece of information that really kind of brings Ralph alive as a person.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And it was so fitting that it was Edgar Allan Poe, too, since he has the Baltimore connection as well. So, you know, all in all, I think that priming activity felt like a real success to me, and we got a lot of positive comments about it, along with, you know, a number of people who did say that made them uncomfortable. But again, you know, we think that's fine and should happen in a learning event. So we've talked about, you know, kind of the event overall and our perspective on it. We've talked about the pre-event work that we attempted to do. And, you know, we're probably moderately successful with that. Certainly have a ways to go to figure that out. Talked about the priming activity, where we feel like, you know, that really was a strong point, at least from our perspective. And then, you know, after we did the priming activity, we brought back people back together into our first, what we just called a community assembly. And we were very careful about the language that we used in everything we did around the event, you know, so priming activity that was very intentional, you know, emphatically recommended as opposed to required readings. That was very intentional. And community assembly, just, you know, to signal that we are coming together as a community here, that was very intentional as well. And we just wanted to kind of, you know, I guess set the stage and set the tone following on from that priming activity here.
That's right. So, Jeff, you and I each offered some comments about kind of the general lay of the land for lifelong learning at this point and for what we were hoping to achieve with the symposium. And that felt like important information, you know, around kind of, again, the community assembly piece, kind of drawing us all together to make sure that we sort of all have this kind of shared understanding of the general environment and then this the symposium, the specific event kind of within that larger context.
Yeah, and I thought this was interesting. I mean, with this type of thing, I know I will always strive, I did this time, and I'll strive going forward to be as brief as possible with this kind of thing, because I really don't want to get up there and give a speech in this type of event. But one thing that was interesting for me is, you know, we'd obviously spent all this time designing this, planning it, having the run up to it, thinking through all the themes and connections, having a lot of interaction with the people who are coming. So I think we really did have a kind of a unique perspective by that point, but it didn't start to really crystallize for me until I was sitting down, you know, the week or so before the symposium, saying, okay, what am I going to say in this, you know, 10 minutes or so when I get up there? And it was interesting because what I ended up talking about was this sort of balance between, you know, the human and the machine and how that's kind of playing out in the world of learning. And I had no expectation whatsoever of that sort of being where I would evolve to in thinking about, you know, this business of lifelong learning and this community that we're bringing together. So for me personally, that was, you know, a strong learning experience. And then I hope that helped to, you know, provoke some thinking, and I know it did with at least some people, just based on conversations to help set the stage for, you know, the day and a half that was ahead of that.
Yeah, I think that human theme that began to emerge already, you know, that early on day one, it was really striking for me. And then the related to that was how much poetry had cropped up in the symposium by that point. I had shared a story about being a poet and going to a writer's conference as part of the Jumpstart storytelling. And then Ralph, his Jumpstart story had poetry in it. And then I decided to recite a poem as part of that community assembly, a poem by John Chiardi called In Place of a Curse, because I thought it both showed me kind of my willingness to bring my full self to the symposium. And then also I think the message in that poem around, you know, let's not be meek, let's be willing to sort of, you know, get beat up if necessary and, you know, but be engaged in life and learning. I thought that message worked well. But, you know, I think that already by that point, this idea of human, and for me, you know, poetry is very human. It's not the kind of thing that, you know, we're going to have the machines writing for us. I think that is decidedly human. So already at that point, it was really interesting to see this theme emerging.
Yeah, and, you know, we wanted to try to set the tone in our words, which, you know, that's obviously difficult for us to judge exactly how well we did, but based on the feedback, that seemed to go well. But we also didn't want it to be just about us standing up on stage. We really wanted to incorporate the community into this community assembly. So one of the things we tried out during that opening community assembly was a hot seat. So in this case, Amanda Beckner, who's the vice president of learning at Infocom, she had an issue that she wanted some help wrestling with. So she was willing to come up and kind of, you know, state what she was wrestling with. And then we did some table work and some rapid feedback to help her out. And, you know, I thought that was an incredibly interesting process. We knew doing that, you know, you've got such a diverse range of organizations in the room that, you know, whoever comes up and does a hot seat is going to connect more with some people in the room than the others, whatever their situation is. We try to emphasize that this was, you know, not so much about content as it was about process and really engaging in the kind of thinking and questioning that's going to lead to results that are going to be helpful. And I think, you know, certainly for a lot of people that worked, that had a significant impact. We got good feedback on it. You know, for others, maybe not quite as much. But I think, you know, that's something we're going to try to figure out how to do as well as possible and hopefully, you know, do more of over time at the symposium.
And I think to your point about it being less about content and more about process, I think one thing we may be able to help attendees do in the future is, you know, is tell them to, you know, focus in on the process. So, you know, in Amanda's case where she's asking about, you know, translation and localization of training in, you know, four different countries, you know, that may not speak directly to something you're wrestling with at your association, but still the questions around, okay, how do I solve this sort of logistical issue? How do I get my team behind doing it? Those are questions that can apply to a broad range of circumstances, not just, okay, I'm trying to get training content translated into four languages.
Right. Yeah. How do I deal with partners? I mean, in her case, there was an issue around, you know, how do I lead a team effectively around this to get people to embrace something that's new and different? That new and different doesn't have to have anything to do with international. That new and different can be something that's happening, you know, in your state society. So I think there was a lot there that really applies to any organization. But again, I think, you know, thematically in terms of how we position and communicate going forward to really have that conversation around, you know, let's focus on process more than content. That's really how we're, you know, all going to be as helpful as possible to each other. But, you know, I know in our own professional development, we found hot seats to be very productive. There's limited time ultimately in the way the symposium was designed. And I think that's something we need to look at going forward is, you know, how can we incorporate more of that type of thing into what we do there?
So we've talked a little bit about the symposium overall. We've talked about the pre-event content. We've talked about the priming activity and the community assembly. So I think the last thing we'd like to talk about today are the content pods.
Yeah, and so the content pods, you know, I remember when we were putting together the event originally and trying to think through how we wanted to design things, we knew we didn't want to have the traditional just, you know, long list of breakout sessions where you go for an hour or an hour and 15 minutes and basically get lectured at. But at the same time, you know, we do believe that there is value in somebody with some expertise or some experience being able to convey briefly and concisely some knowledge that they have, be able to relate an experience that might be useful to others. But we wanted to compact that down and get that into, you know, chunks that were, you know, anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes. And I think we ended up more in probably about the 15 to 18 minute range on average with the content pods that that we put together. But we wanted to have, you know, just a series of hopefully very focused, very concise, very high impact content sessions on topics that attendees had told us were important to them. And we did do a lot of, you know, initial conversations and surveying to narrow down what are those topics that people care the most about. And then, you know, lined up these series of four content pods, one after the other on each of the days. And again, each of those were around 15 to 20 minutes. And I, you know, I think on average, I thought the content pods themselves were high quality. I think people delivered very good content. They were concise. I mean, one of our ideas though was that you know, we wanted these to be about different topics and figure out ways to you know, connect together different threads of the conference. And we had as threads, you know, strategy, technology, learning, and marketing, and the view that, you know, those need to be interwoven. Those need to be interleaving because you never encounter those things in the abstract. You always encounter them together, basically. And so that was one of the motivating ideas behind, you know, putting these compact pieces of content together in these sessions on each day. And I'd say maybe mixed results on how that interleaving turned out.
Well, and as part of that, we decided to have a collective question and answer time after all four of the content pods were presented. And we were hoping that in part that would suggest to learners that, okay, you know, I don't have to just ask a question about what Seth presented in his content pod or about what Wes presented in his content pod. You know, oh, I can maybe ask a question or make a comment on how I see what Seth said about innovation and what Wes said about, you know, data, how those fit together. And so we wanted to encourage the interleaving that way. I think that, you know, maybe again, it would have behooved us to say some of that, you know, out loud rather than just, you know, having thought it ourselves. And I think too, we could also have the individuals presenting the content pods, you know, rather than saying this is, you know, purely Q&A from the audience, maybe say too, we really want it to be a conversation among, you know, the people presenting. And so part of what, you know, I would do if I'm presenting a content pod is not only present my content pod, but I would also be kind of showing as an example, you know, making some of those connections. So I might have a question or a comment that really does pick up both on something that Seth said and something that you said, Jeff.
Yeah, so I mean, I think we did, you know, try again. This is, it was in some of the pre-event communication to say that that's what we were doing. But as you were saying, being a little bit more explicit about it in the moment, helping to facilitate those connections. And then, you know, there was the connection among the content pods. There was also the connection from the content pods into the, you know, the rest of the event, and particularly the afternoon application labs. I know I at least tried to pull what I knew I was doing in my content pods into my afternoon application lab, and I tried where possible to pull from other faculty members' presentations and doing that, but that's probably a process that we could facilitate even more than we did. And we did spend a lot of time with faculty ahead of time, so these are things that the faculty were aware of, but for us, you know, in terms of planning for next year, I think even more awareness, even more time working around that concept to, again, get this idea of interleaving, which, you know, draws from the work in Make It Stick, which was, you know, very influential on our design of this conference in general, but really highlighting that interleaving and trying to make it function even better going forward. And I think, you know, just to wrap up this time, that idea of interleaving, I think also fits in with the idea of just, you know, integration. And one item we might be able to talk about as we close off this session, and in the next session we'll talk about the application labs we did and the synthesis sessions and some of the other parts of the program. But we made a couple of decisions around this conference that I think were important. One is that in terms of sponsors and vendors, you know, we didn't want this to be the, you know, big exhibit hall, let's sign up as many sponsors as we can sort of event. We wanted a limited number of sponsors, and we wanted to actually involve those people in the event in a meaningful way from a learning perspective. So have them actually participating as true participants in the event, have them actually delivering content with the idea that this was going to not be, you know, in any way promotional content, but actually meaningful content that was contributing to the overall experience. And, you know, we specifically were getting the top people from the vendors to come. So these were the CEOs, you know, or the senior people from the vendors who were coming and sitting at the tables and participating. And those sponsors, you know, were Digital Ignite, which is now part of your membership, YM Learning, Higher Logic, and then Classroom 24/7, and I think, you know, all in all, being able to integrate the vendors in that way, I think worked out pretty well.
I think it fit too with the idea of, you know, we're building a community here, and to sort of have a community and then have, you know, the vendors, these others that are sort of, you know, roped off and not allowed in. I think that sort of goes against the grain of what we were trying to create. And I'll say too, from my experience, that the senior level folks that we had from all three of those organizations are really smart. I mean, you know, they have a lot of knowledge and experience working with associations, working with people in the business of lifelong learning. And so, you know, if you sit down and talk with Tamer Ali of YM Learning, you're going to hear something valuable. Same thing with Ernie Liang of Classroom 24/7, Andy Steggles of Higher Logic. I mean, he has his experience at Higher Logic. He also has his experience as working in associations prior to starting Higher Logic. So all of them really did have valuable perspectives and information to share, and I think they did that. They brought that to the symposium.
Yeah, and then, I mean, the other thing that we tried to do was to really meaningfully reduce the separation between faculty and attendees, with the idea that, you know, we didn't want the faculties to be delivering content so much as facilitating conversations and being involved in those conversations themselves. And we really wanted the attendees themselves to be helping to deliver content where that made sense and to be helping with the facilitation. And I think certainly, you know, this is a work in progress. I mean, I think, you know, we're going to have to get better and better at this over time. I mean, I think there's still a little more, you know, sort of the faculty or presenter type of atmosphere than I would have liked. But the reality was, you know, the faculty were the ones who actually were willing to step up and present content for the most part. We did actually, you know, try to get attendees to deliver content pods, and Pat Mangan from NRECA was somebody who did step up and volunteer to do that. He was the only one who volunteered to do that. So he did deliver a content pod. And I have to say there, we did get some comments, you know, it would have been nice to hear from organizations other than NRECA, but, you know, to their credit, you know, they stepped up. They wanted to deliver a content pod. They wanted to do a hot seat. They were actually doing some things that were very meaningful to what we were doing in one of the app labs. And I hope we get more of that going forward, this idea of, you know, really integrating attendees into the delivery and facilitation of the experience, and sort of blurring that line between the traditional faculty presenter role and the participant attendee role much more than typically tends to be the case.
And again, for me, that gets back to this idea of community that, you know, I don't think you or I are imagining a very strictly hierarchical sort of community mm-hmm. here. I think this is what we're looking for with the leading learning community, is the fact that we are all engaged around lifelong learning, and we all have rich experiences to share with one another. And so it's kind of, how do we help uncover those and get people to step up like Pat and share them?
Right. So, you know, circling back to the beginning of this, you know, when we looked at the event overall and kind of our, you know, our after action review, what do we set out to do? What actually happened? You know, what would we change going forward? You know, again, event wise, we definitely pulled off an event and feel like it was a strong event. I mean, we're getting very good reviews on it at this point, but we really want to focus more going forward on communicating this as a process. The event is just one part of the process. The event is just, you know, one part of the community and that idea of community. So really making sure, I think probably more than anything else, that that we're able to focus on that going forward. And then, you know, for all of the specific parts of the agenda that we talked about here, or, you know, the pre-event content, the primary activity, the content pods, the assembly, you know, obviously those are all things that we can continue to get better at based on our own perspective and the feedback we've gotten. So we'll wrap up this session just having talked about those things. But the next time around, we're going to talk about, let's see, we got the app labs, the application labs to talk about.
We've got the synthesis sessions to talk about. We think we've also got, you know, I think lunch and breaks. I think we should talk about that because, again, it's about sort of the pacing and the white space as well.
Right. And then the idea of bringing in the outside speaker, who is Rohit Bhargava in this case, and how that works. So still plenty to cover. And the next episode of our after action review on the Leading Learning Symposium. In the meantime, I think we won't do our sort of standard exit here, but we will say, you know, if you're enjoying the Leading Learning podcast, we, you know, really appreciate it if you would consider subscribing to it. You can do that very easily by going to leadinglearning.com/iTunes. We'd appreciate it if you're, you know, if you do subscribe, if you will give us a rating on iTunes as well, and if in general you will share the Leading Learning podcast with others if you are finding it valuable.
So thank you for listening, and until next time on the Leading Learning podcast.